Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live Thursday night, your favorite Stop the Rated R 313 Wrestling podcast. I don't know how the hell I got that song, but obviously it was the wrong song, so you know the wrong guy is running things tonight. I'm joined live with my interim co-host, Coco T. Ware, and man, we had quite a time on Friday night. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what we're going to be doing this weekend. And here in about 30 minutes, we're going to talk to ECW original and legend C.W. Anderson, 28 years in the wrestling business. I'm sure he's got some cool stories to tell. So, Coco, you
yes,
with us this evening?
That's right. Yes, sir, I am here in the flesh, live and in Technicolor, baby. The Black Man, Coco T. West, founder and leader, can't take the people's band, baby. This is the week of all weeks, good brother Greg. You already know I'm excited, giddy as giddy can be, baby. This has been a wonderful week. I've been telling you that right now, daddy. And yes, on last week, we had a phenomenal time at PWAF. And today, we got the good brother, C.W. Anderson, ECW legend. Man, this is a wonderful week. That's all I can say.
Absolutely, man. We got one day and a wake up, as they say, before the big 40th birthday bash takes place.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The one night only birthday bash, baby. The black man just crossed over from the 3-9 to the big 4-0, baby. And I'm just beginning to live. You feel what I'm saying? We going to be live in the flesh playing some of the sweetest music you've ever heard in all your life. All my cousins and them going to be there. Mama Beware going to be there. Brother D. West going to be there. Ed Wifey is going to be there. The Sensational One is going down, baby. It's going to be hotter than fish grease in the middle of the desert. You know what I'm saying? I cannot wait. Two more days.
And I'll definitely be there.
Oh.
Brother Marquez will be there. It's definitely going to be a fun time. We had a fun time.
It's a family affair.
Man, you like to offend my friends. My friends, Kyler
what?
And Forever Young, they don't like you too much. And my bestie, AVZ, he don't like you too much either.
Hey, well, you know what? That's not my fault that them troublemakers was causing all kinds of mischief in that wonderful play at Atlantis in Melvindale, messing with the good people of Melvindale. They were sitting there. I mean, Brother Kyler grabbed, if y'all would have seen it was egregious. It was unbelievable. He grabbed a handicapped man's crutch and threw it across the field. I couldn't just stand there and take that kindly. And Forever Young is sitting there documenting on his phone, cheering it on and smiling and kicking and whatnot. And so I had to...
They were helping him out. Listen,
somebody.
Xander just got cleared for no weight restrictions on his recently repaired ACL. He's like 6 weeks out from surgery. He's doing better than the doctors expected. They're just giving him a boost in his recovery was all.
That was no boost, brother. That was antagonization. That's all that was, that Kyler and that Forever Young just causing trouble. They see they troublemakers. That's what I call them. Troublemaker. And so I had to confront them, and I had to put them on my show so people could see the misbehavior, the disrespect that the black man was receiving. But you know what? I love it when a good plan comes together, because good old Brutus Atwell, the Shrek, a professional wrestler here in Michigan, takes them away. You feel what I'm saying? He's about to chew one of their arms off or something like that. But, yeah, they was just being rude and mean and disrespectful, talking about I was rude, that I was the problem, that I wasn't nice. And it was them the whole time. And you know it, Brother Greg. You know it. You wouldn't have grabbed no man's crutch and threw it across the field. You ain't got it in you like that.
I mean, I didn't think of it, but Xander is my friend. I mean, I would do anything to encourage my friend and, you know, help promote his healing. I would. I don't know if that would have been my thought. It was, you know, some good thinking, though. I was just trying to help the kid out.
Nah, man. That's just some nonsense. That one right there, you need a hold on. Let me do something here. You hear that? That's a toilet. Got to flush that mess you talking about straight down the commode. The stuff they was doing ain't nothing but what the bulls done left in the yard. You feel what I'm saying? They was causing all kinds of trouble. Oh, and let me get on about that Mr. A-A-D-A-D-D.
Thank you. That's where
GPS.
I was going next.
What's his name? What's his GPS?
Alex
S-A-T.
Van Zant. A-V-Z.
Oh, that Starbucks sipping sucker. He's always called in a kind of mission to. I caught him.
The three-time homecoming queen. The Sultan of Starbucks.
Oh, goodness gracious. That means he failed high school four times. Is that what you're trying to tell me? He failed high school four times?
No.
So three-time homecoming queen. Is that what you're telling
no,
me?
No, all it means is freshman year, he was too busy in his studies to be involved. His sophomore, junior, and senior year, won it by a landslide. Three-time homecoming queen.
Ah, bahooey. Bahooey. That's just some nonsense. That's just some talk. To try to make himself look good. But, yeah, I caught him one-on-one in that dog collar match with good old it wasn't a dog collar match, but it was just a one-on-one match against old school Rick Cartier and good brother old school was giving him the business, taking him to school, ding, ding, baby. And all of
a sudden, who won that match?
All of a sudden, the Starbucks sipping sucker called some kind of trouble, diversion with the referee, kick old school in his school bell, you know what I'm saying, and got the 1-2-3 that way. He cheated. And ZZ Top, whatever his name is, he cheated, you feel what I'm saying? He did dirt, man. He did wrong, and you know it. And then he had the nerve to say that he
I don't know what you're talking about. He cheated. He won. He was victorious.
Victorious, more like cheating. You feel what I'm saying? He cheated to win. See, if you can't do it the right way, like good brother Lecture Ely, you know what I'm saying?
What's the right way?
Like my main man and Mr. One Night Only. You win fair and square in that ring, 1-2-3, or tap him out. He didn't do none of that. He kicked him where he was supposed to hit him, and then he covered him up, pulled his trunks for the win. I saw it all, baby. I saw it all.
He wasn't disqualified.
We all seen it.
I mean, it's literally within the rules if the referee does not call for the bell. If the referee doesn't see it, it's arguable that it is within the rules. I mean, how many times do you see somebody getting choked in the corner for 2 seconds before the four count starts? I mean, that's 6 seconds. Oh, my God, he cheated. He should be disqualified. Which, you know,
I have a theory
that irate is not a disqualifiable offense. I have not seen any match where a rake to the eyes, a simple eye rake, was a disqualifiable offense. I've not seen it. So, I mean, it's arguable. Is it an infraction? Yes, it is, but so is choking somebody in the ropes. So is standing on the second turnbuckle and clobbering a motherfucker in the nugget piece. That is a violation of the 5-second rule. But, oh, no, all these good-feeling babyface fans like you, Coco, are cheering it on. 1, 2, 3, counting them away as AVZ gets his nugget piece smashed in. But, you know, I mean, is that cheating? That's disqualifiable. Past five. At five.
See, that's the problem. See, that's the problem, good brother Greg. You're stating the obvious. We know that there's a 5-count rule for certain things that you can kind of, you know, bend the rules just a touch. But what he did was a clear disqualification. You know, that's in the wrestling rule book. You can't kick somebody in their nose.
Again, the 10 fists to the nugget.
You can't do that.
10 fists to the nugget in the corner is way more than a 5-count. But because everybody's cheering for it, the paying fans are cheering, we're going to let that cheating go. We're going to let that disqualifiable offense times 2, because you get 5, you just delivered at least 10, you know, while a defenseless man was defenseless in the corner. How is that any different than sneaking a, you know, a suspicious strike in where you can?
We
use some leverage. You see, I mean,
that's what,
you know,
Brother Greg, now this is what we call, Brother Greg, now come on now, this is what we call.
A handful of tights, by the way, not a disqualifiable offense. Not a disqualifiable offense.
Come on,
a handful of tights.
You know,
if it is, give me precedent.
Check it out. This is intellectual dishonesty, and you know it, Daddy. You can't do nothing.
I like that. Intellectual dishonesty.
That's right, baby. It's intellectual dishonesty. You know it, brother. You know it, baby.
I could see how you say that, but I'm trying to present it to you backed by facts and supporting my view with facts, you know? And you cannot deny that. How many times have you cheered on 10 fists to the nugget piece in the corner?
What? No. Let me
how many times have you cheered that on? How many times have you encouraged that as
a
fan?
Before I even answer that question, I'm going to go back to your previous question. You said you need some facts about a kick in the boys, or nuggets, if you will. How that's all right. Okay, so let's take it back to, I believe it was WrestleMania. It was Battle of the Big Fellas, the Big Show, versus Mr. Hall of Pain himself, Mark Henry. In the middle of that match, It was for the World Heavyweight Championship, by the way. And guess what happened? Mark Henry, in front of the referee, in front of thousands and thousands and millions of people, zeroing in, watching that match, because he knew that Brother Big Show was getting the best of him. He decided to haul off and kick him in his big shows, you know what I'm saying? And you know what happened? The referee called for the bell and disqualified Brother Mark Henry, even though he retained his championship, because you can't lose the belt on a pin or you can only lose it on pinfalls or submission, and he knew that. So he just took the easy way out and cheated. You know
okay.
what I'm saying?
Who?
And he did it blatantly.
He left with the title. Hang on. He left with the title, and he was the last man standing. I don't see the problem here. Okay, he was disqualified. How is Rick Cartier getting kicked in his old school, in his old school back? How is that? I mean, a mule kick any different than a back elbow to get out of a situation? I mean, yes, but the ref didn't see it. There was no title on the line. That's, I mean, you're comparing apples and oranges. So let me ask you something else. How do you feel about Eddie Guerrero?
Wait a minute. Why are you bringing up Eddie Guerrero? You missed the point. Had he got caught, he would have been in trouble, Daddy. That's all that is. He was just good at it.
Why is it different when Goldberg spears the WWE champion and we celebrate with a tear in our eye when Eddie wins the championship? The ref didn't see it. I mean, it's when that ref is out of sight, that's just smart wrestling and ring awareness, veteran ring awareness. You know where your opponent is, you know where you are in the ring, and you damn well know where the official is. And if you know those three things and you keep an eye on those three things, you have more weapons in your arsenal to be successful. And that's what wrestling's about, is being successful. And if he got kicked in his old school sweaty sack and handful of his ginormous tights got caught in AVZ's perfectly manicured paw, then
that is just
damn shame. Boo-hoo. Sorry, not sorry.
The lies. You're spinning the spin. You're the spin, Dr. Ain't Tanaka, Brother Greg. I mean,
do I deny that one of AVZ's extremities kicked the old school sack? Yes, it absolutely did. I will not deny that. But was his hand caught up in Rick Cartier's trunks? He was. But the referee was counting the three, and that's all that matters. The referee seen AVZ cover Rick Cartier 1, 2, 3.
That's a shame.
And I'm telling you, it's not going to be no different.
Let me tell you this. If it was so legal and all right, why didn't he kick old school Rick right in front of the referee so that the referee could see it? He didn't do it.
I tell you right now,
so that the referee could be visible. He didn't do it then.
Don't even say if.
Mark Henry doing it in front of the referee, even though I still didn't like how he went about winning that match. Well, he didn't even win the match. He lost the match. You feel what I'm saying?
No, you said it right. He left with the belt. He was the last man standing. I don't see the problem here.
But he
who
lost.
Who was standing?
That's the problem. See, that's why good people like your brother Electric Ely. He's going to win the right way,
so,
no matter what. See, I can respect.
Do you think the Big Show left that match feeling like a winner? Do you seriously think the Big Show left WrestleMania feeling like a winner?
Oh,
he got dropped.
He did feel like
he
a
got
winner.
Kicked in his Big
was,
Shows,
he
and he
knew,
got dropped.
And he knew he was cheated out of a match, but he was
he left
no
empty-handed with his balls in his throat. I doubt he felt like a winner on the grandest stage. Do you think Mark Henry left that match? Do you think Mark Henry left that match feeling like a winner? Because I would say he did, in my opinion.
Anytime a guy does something like that, they always feel good. But let me tell you something. That feel
so what's the problem? I don't see the problem here.
Long because he lost that title eventually, you know what I'm saying? So it didn't last him forever. It didn't do him too much better. See, that's what I'm saying. Guys like good brother Lucky Ely, Mysterious Movado, people like that, baby, They get all the good that's coming to them because they do things the right way, always.
I can't wait
time.
Till them two men get what they actually have coming to them. But now, I'm going to break some news to you right now, Coco, just for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say when because that's not set in stone. But we are going to have, in the very near future, my good friend, and maybe not yours, Road Rash, and he is going to bring his protege. I don't know if you've seen the promo. I'm going to tell you a little about it. But his new protege, the new breed of Hannah Henderson, is going to be on the show with us.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I must say, I like that Hannah Henderson, but I'm going to have to try to talk
I know
to
you do.
Sister because she's a sweetheart, and I love her, and I think she's got so much promise. And you know what? She can do
Nomads.
Good and bad all by herself. She don't need no
Nomads.
She don't need none of the Nomads or them troublemakers.
She
they
was trained by Nomads. She was trained by Nomads, and
well,
she will forever have loyalty to the Nomads. I promise you that.
A7's
right now. He's trying
God,
to turn over a better leaf. Sorry about that. He prevented Road Rash from using the weapon.
As I was saying before, John Kreese caught little Johnny from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. But you see how that worked out for him, right?
You know what? A fun fact. I went to dinner with I went to dinner with, actually, I'm not even going to say who, with some guys after Pro Wrestling All-Stars on Friday night. And, yeah, good time, man. Some great guys.
I'm sure it was.
And
I'm
you
sure
got,
it was.
You had the opportunity to talk to the new PWAS champion. The look on your face was priceless. I didn't know you didn't know the history. I might have, put you up on some of the history, but yeah.
Oh, let me tell you, good brother Greg. I have spoken to I have not quite spoken to the Soul Taker, but I've watched a few things. I've seen him in a few matches, and that brother gives me chills every single time he stepped foot in that ring. It was a life-changing experience having him. I didn't even approach him. He practically stalked me, Brother Greg, and asking questions, and he just gave me that death-eye stare that he had in good brother L.J. Lawrence's face, former PWS champion, whom he defeated and vanquished on Friday night.
Former.
But let me tell you, man, I walked away with my life unscathed, so I'm very grateful. I mean, he said he don't like black people, but he liked black people, so I don't know how to take that one. But he said no souls matter, but yet somehow I managed to live, so I was amazed. I mean, he started interrogating me, asking me if I did drugs or old drugs or no. And I'm like, oh, no. Crack is whack, baby. I learned that from Sister Whitney Houston. Crack is whack, baby. I don't mess with none of that. So I'm glad that I didn't say yes because he probably would have choke slammed me. So maybe if I show up on the 11th of July.
I was there to clean you up.
PWAS event. Well, thank you, sir. I really appreciate
it. I was there to clean you up off the, off the ground there after he, splatted you. I was there for you.
Well, thank you. How great. I mean, you would do better by going, hey, this brother's all right, so you can go easy on him. I mean, you could have did that, Brother Greg, but you had me on there walking on eggshells, and I had to deal with the new PWAS heavyweight champion. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, I almost had to get a new pair of shorts. You know what I'm saying? I almost had to get a clean pair of DVDs. Oh, wait a minute. That's that Starbucks sipping sucker. That's something that he wears. But I wanted to get me a new pair of boxers, man, because, like I said, that brother is scary. You know, he's the kind of nightmare that haunts you in your dreams and when you wake up. How's that happen? Only Freddy Krueger do stuff like that. And he ain't no Freddy Krueger. So that says a lot about him.
I beg to differ. And you caught him in a good mood. I mean, it could have went south quick. Had you been one of them drug dealers or, you know, that could have got bad for you real quick.
It would not have gone well. I mean, there would have been a funeral right there on the spot. My wife would, my sister would have been.
Do you really want to have your funeral in shitty Melvindale?
I mean, would I have had a choice? I mean, it wasn't like the soul taker was giving me much of an option now, was it?
That's true. Yeah, he really moves forward with the services.
You'd have been given the eulogy and everything, Daddy.
I was
trouble.
There.
Yeah,
you
probably made a T-shirt and profited off of it. I was there when the soul taker choked slam the black man couple T-Web. I can see it now.
There's not always time
thing.
To expedite these things, but since you know you mentioned it, if you you need shirts. Get a hold of Sean Stockmeyer at Face Kicked Apparel, man. The greatest merch maker in the Mid-South, the Midwest at least. And I mean, he made our shirts. They're great. I have probably 50 different Face Kicked Apparel shirts that, you know, the 24 Karat Lion, Jeremiah Goldmane, the MC the party Saturday night. His shirts were made by Face Kicked Apparel.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, and speaking of wrestlers, showing up at this Saturday's party, while you're going to see the good brother, Jeremiah Goldman, who happens to be a good friend of mine. Now, I love the guy. I'm going to have to talk to him about his personnel, his clientele. That doggone Adam Van Zandt, he needs to ditch him real quick. But aside from that, not only will you see AVZ there, you just might see Dirty Money Inc. popping up. You just might see him. I had a chance to interview them.
My good friend, Briar Wellington.
Yes, sir.
One of my best friends,
Briar
Wellington. The rightful champions. The rightful PWAS tag team champions. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah,
probably I'm expecting within 5 minutes. Been within 5 minutes to hear from our featured host or guest of the evening, Mr. C.W. Anderson. It's definitely going to be a fun conversation to have. Did you get into ECW? We're like exactly the same age. I am a month behind you. August 24th, I turn 40. And
awesome.
You know, so we came up in the same
babies.
Era.
Let me say,
81.
Yes, sir. I do remember watching ECW back in the day. You know what I love, Betsy, before cable and now we got streaming. See, I love the syndication era. You know what I'm saying? When you come home from school, Monday through Friday, and if you live in Detroit, you would turn on Channel 38. That was one of the local channels. And they would show all kind of different programming. And so one of the things that made my life as an 80s, 90s kid is that they started showing all these other wrestling companies outside of WCW and WWF. You had some Smoky Mountain Wrestling. You had some GWF, Global Wrestling Federation. Kids don't know nothing about that, good brother Greg. We do. And then you have some ECW, when it was called Eastern Championship Wrestling. You know what I'm saying? And then brother Paul Dangerously, as they call him back then, he took it to the extreme and said, we're going to be Extreme Championship Wrestling. So I remember very, very well. I remember when they started the tournament for their new ECW Heavyweight Champion. I remember the days, baby, when the franchise Shane Douglas won it all. And then he slammed down the big gold belt and said, you give me the ECW Championship, baby. Kicked off the NWA committee. I'll never forget that day. So, yes, sir. I know me a little something about some ECW. Bring on good brother C.W. Anderson. I can't wait to hear from him. I'm really excited.
As am I. And, I was looking into some of his other accolades. Dude, I was absolutely shocked. It was, quite a career, quite a lot to talk about. It's going to be fun to see what kind of stories he tells us. And as always, and as with all of our guests, We really thank them for their time. I mean, nobody owes us anything. Just, you know, another case of some really cool people taking a liking to us, in this case, Day-Day, of course. Our,
yes, sir.
Actually,
your brother Day-Day.
I believe we have our guest now. It's the Rated R 313 Wrestling Podcast. You're live. Who do we got? I believe we have our featured
Brother
guest for the evening on the line. Mr. Anderson, are you?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm here, guys. What's going on?
Awesome. What's happening, good brother Anderson? This is the Black Man Couple T-Ware, founder of the Cafe the People's Band. I'm standing in for the sweet Texan, good brother Day-Day Cruz, and I'm standing here with good brother Greg, the Mock from Rated R 313 Podcast. So good to meet you, sir.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank y'all for having me on.
Oh, man, anytime we get a chance to talk to a legend such as yourself, I just got, you know, into indie wrestling probably with, you know, within the last 7-8 years. And, you know, I've learned that, you know, a lot of guys have been around a lot. And, you know, you start looking back and seeing, and, man, you have been around. And you've been around for a long
yeah.
time, and you've been very successful.
Yeah, I'm ancient
OG.
Almost.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I'm kind
yes,
of ancient
sir.
In this
quite,
biz, man.
Quite
28 good. Years.
That's a long time, brother. Long time. That's like raising a baby, watching them grow up, and potentially see them start their own family. You know what I'm saying? That's how long your career goes. You know, that,
well,
that's,
when
that's
you wrestle,
awesome
when you wrestle guys now, and you've actually been wrestling longer, and they've been alive. That's kind of saying something.
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, we're just talking about how we, you know, basically grew up in the same era. We're about to turn 40. We watched, you know, ECW, and it was, you know, definitely to me the funnest era in wrestling. I think ECW started it all.
Yeah, wrestling was so different back then, a lot more fun. Had so much to choose from back then, and me being part of ECW, it's one of those you still miss it every day, and hell, we're working on, what, 20 years now? Yeah, it's a little over 20 years since ECW has been gone. And everybody says that that era, the Attitude Era, the end of the WCW and ECW was the best time of professional wrestling.
And
mm-hmm.
to me,
yes,
everybody
was, I mean.
Else went back and emulated ECW because they had it all from the extreme hardcore to the, I mean, 5-star wrestling matches to, you know, it had it all. And, I mean, it was the top to me then. I don't know. I've always been a wrestling fan.
Well, Jack Victory told me a long time ago that with ECW, if you give somebody everything as far as a hardcore match, an actual wrestling match, a little old school, Japanese style, luchadors, if you give them a little bit of that in every show, you're going to satisfy every wrestling fan's need. And I think ECW did that because we had, you know, you had Masato Tanaka, you had Tajiri, super crazy, and then you had older school guys that wrestled like myself, Steve Corino, and then you had Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn, the hardcore guys with Balls and Axel, the Dudleys, New Jack. So we give them a little bit of everything. So
man.
It was always, you know, every show was every top notch to us.
And ECW introduced the Japanese style, the lucha style, that they introduced the United States to that. They introduced, you know, WCW may have shown it to the masses, but they brought it here first.
Yeah, we were the ones that, well, it was even the guys that were there before I was, but, you know, everybody copied what ECW did, the ladders, the tables, the chairs, you know, WWE, WWF, they took it to another whole nother level with it being able to, as you said, show it to the masses because, again, we were the originators of it to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
yes,
awesome.
Sir. Yes, sir. Now,
So actually, I'd like to talk about your beginning some. You are the very interesting story. How, you know, you it do I understand right? You were kind of self trained and then ended up at the power plant.
Right. That was first 6 or 7 years of my career. I kind of taught myself, never really had any formidable training. And then once I got to the power plant through one of my students, who was Lodi, Raven sign guy, when I got through the power plant, it took Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, Mike Winter, and Pez Watley of taking everything I thought I knew and fixing it and molding it into the person that got the job at ECW.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That is awesome, brother.
And that's definitely the one that we all remember you for.
Right.
Brother Grant, am I able to ask a question now, or do you still have
go
your
ahead,
line?
Go ahead, Coco. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yep,
okay,
go ahead, Coco.
So that's all right. Now, Brother Anderson, here's what I need to know, because, see, the black man is a musician. You feel what I'm saying? And if you
right.
heard me earlier, I founded a band, and we're going to cover pro wrestling things, because that's what the people want around here. So at any rate, in the heyday of ECW, when the Sandman used to come out to Metallica's Inner Sandman, what was that crowd like? With you being there, being around it, explain that. Like, what was that like, hearing and feeling that crowd sing along and Sandman mingling with the audience? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The loudest pop I've ever heard, and it's actually on YouTube. I was there that the night it happened, was when the Sandman came back from WCW and nobody knew he was there, and his music hit. And I remember sitting beside my friend Mike Howell, who was one of the Dups, and the place erupted so loud, the whole building at the ECW arena was shaking, and Mike looks over at me. He said, "This is the loudest thing I've ever heard in my entire life." Hearing that music hit, hearing the people go crazy, it was about like, it wasn't as, Rob Van Dam's entrance got a huge pop, but nothing like Sandman's, because they knew for the first 5 or 6 minutes they were going to get entertained, somebody was going to get a beer poured on them, and they were all going to sing along. And it goes back to the classics of how you're, as a professional wrestler, bringing the crowd into your match, making them a part of the show. And Sandman,
mm-hmm.
that's what he did. And every time it was the same. I always loved it, unless I had to wrestle him, because you had to stand there for 5 or 6 minutes while you're trying to be a badass, and he's just walking around the ring. So you're standing there like a jackass while he's just walking. But, you know, it was just one of the little funny things we always should joke about. And I wrestled him one night. We're in Florida at a baseball stadium, and he comes out to his music, and he gets on a golf cart and drives around the outfield while his music plays. And I'm standing in the ring at home plate going, what in the hell is going on? And he's out there in outfield just driving around with a golf cart. But just being in the ring, being a part of listening to Sandman stuff, man, that was something special, because that crowd never got tired of hearing that music come on.
Awesome. Let me tell you, that's something that the black man's, my band, Kayfabe, we gonna be working on that song real soon, because I know people love that music. They love good music. It gives them memories, you know what I'm saying? So I'm glad that you answered that question. And then I'm going to look back on some of those videos, because those crowds will go insane. I also want to know, One Night Stand, ECW One Night Stand, what was that like, man, when you attended and being a part of that one? What was the experience like?
It started out fantastic, because I actually was supposed to wrestle a match that night. Johnny Swinger and myself was supposed to work Danny Dorn and Roadkill in either like the first or second match. And then it got changed an hour or so before showtime, and I was supposed to do a dark match. And then that got changed to where I got asked to I could sit backstage or I could sit in the crowd and watch the show. So being part of that, and I had just came from Shane Douglas's Hardcore Homecoming at the ECW Arena, which actually I had more fun at, because that's the first time anybody had got to see an ECW reunion show. And Simon and I were the first people out in that match, and hearing the ECW crowd erupt for us had our adrenaline so high that we were literally shaking. Our adrenaline was going so hard. But the one night stand was okay. Seeing a lot of the guys wrestle like Benoit and Guerrero, wasn't a big fan of the WWE interaction, but you know, that's Vince's thing, is, you know, and put his guys in something that's already over, to try to make it his own. So that was the one thing that a bunch of the ECW originals were not a fan of. Of course, it was Vince's company, but that's another story for a longer period of time. But overall, the show was pretty good, sitting there watching it.
You mentioned Simon Diamond. You guys, I had no idea until I did my research, you guys have been very successful as a team.
Yeah, so I've known Simon almost since day one of the business. I've known him as long as I have Steve Corino, and we were all good friends even before ECW. And then I got my little run with Simon and Swinger near the end, and then when MLW come back through, and we were Steve and I were already doing the Extreme Horseman down for Dusty Rhodes Promotion TCW, we decided to bring – we've always wanted to bring Simon in as our third member, because – Steve and I were a very successful tag team in Japan, but Simon and our chemistry was, and it's hard to even top what chemistry Steve and I had, but Simon and I had amazing chemistry as a tag team. We were your typical Tully and Arn.
So,
awesome.
You have a lot of championships and accolades. Have you ever stopped and counted them all up?
I a few years ago I did a program with a guy here in North Carolina to where I had every one of my championships written down and had it introduced during my introduction, because I was a heel and I wanted to get the most heat possible. So I think it was like something around 60 or something like that titles. And after about 20, people were booing the shit out of it because the list just kept going. But yes, 28 years, man. It's been a lot of titles.
Mentioned
45. Okay.
On your Wikipedia.
Okay.
45 that are there, and that's not including, I forget the promotion, but you had won so many other awards, like year-end awards with that promotion, and I didn't even count those. Just, and a lot of them were tag team titles with Simon Diamond. And it's, none of them are like 19 reigns. No, it's one here, one there, two here, three there, sometimes with different partners. But it's it's kind of crazy. So Coco and I are the same age. We both turned 40 this year. Coco just turned 40. I do next month. And my first favorite wrestler was Tommy Rich. Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer were, feuding when I got into wrestling.
Yeah.
I was such a young child. And we were at a show. I don't know if it was in Pittsburgh or in West Virginia, but that's where I'm from, the Pittsburgh area. But after the show, there was, Tommy Rich was out, but you couldn't get nowhere near him, and I was so little. But Ole Anderson was out, and Ole Anderson met me, and he shook my hand, and my little hand barely fit in the palm of his hand, but he was nice to me, and he was cool. That's why I was always low-key a Horseman fan. I always loved the Horseman, and I always loved Arn Anderson, and I loved Ole Anderson. And, when the next generation was coming up, and here's C.W. Anderson, I'm like, yep. My guy. I wasn't aware of the Extreme Horseman until I read about it when I was doing my research. We could probably talk for hours about the things you've done in 28 years.
There's a lot of stories. And the brainchild of Dusty Rhodes was the Extreme Horseman. He sat Barry Windham, myself, and Steve Corino down in Georgia one night and said he had an idea, said, I want to form a group with you three and called you the Extreme Horsemen, because Barry, you're one of the original four horsemen, and Steve, you and CW came from the Extreme. So we just took it and ran with it, and had a great run. Still, I still run the Extreme Horsemen today with Preston Quinn here in the Carolinas.
Oh, that's awesome,
great,
man. See, now that I did not. Now I gotta say the black. I didn't know that, man. See, now I'm gonna really be looking up CZW. Because I do know that was Brother Dustin Rhodes' promotion. And by the way, Dustin is one of my all-time favorites. Some people say that the black man sounds like Dustin Rhodes, but I always just tell people, David, great minds just speak alike. That's all that is. It's a mere coincidence. But at any rate, I think that's so fantastic that Dustin, that great wrestling mind of his, people don't give him enough credit, in my opinion. In addition to talking about other great legends, we know we recently lost Brother New Jack. I mean, the man was notorious as he was, legendary. Can you tell us about some memories that you have of him, some work you've done with him?
You know, the day I found out New Jack died, I broke down crying because if you're in the wrestling business and you're around North Carolina and stuff like that, you knew how close me and New Jack were. We talked a lot because he lived about an hour from me. And he was a really, really good person. And he and I hit it off from the very first day we met at ECW. In fact, I actually still talk to his wife about every week now. I just message her and check in on her and see how she's doing. And she tells me every time, she says, CW, Jerome loved you. She said, because he always called me Big Head. That was his nickname for me. And she says, he always talked about you. He always, you know, thought a lot of you. He said, you know, in this wrestling business, he said he could count on one hand the people that he considered his brother. He said, you were one of them. I saw him, you know, a few months before he died, and we hung out. I got video with him and stuff like that. But Jack and I have had so many things happen, so many stories. But a couple of my most infamous ones with him is one night. The one night he and I are driving to St. Louis. We're somewhere in Missouri, and he had gotten hurt on that show, so he asked if I would drive him to the next town, which was St. Louis. Of course I would. So I hop in. He had a little Mitsubishi Eclipse, and we're driving in it, and he's passed out because he had taken a pain pill to knock him out. And then where we were at was nothing but fucking cornfields. It was just miles and miles of cornfield. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I look over to the left, and about 50, 60 feet off the road, there's this huge, huge cross burning, and it's like 20 feet high.
Ooh.
So I like slap Jack on the arm. I said, Jack, what do you think about that? Jack wakes up and looks at me and sees that cross and like slaps me and goes, keep driving, CW, just keep driving, and passes back out. My favorite one of him that I tell everywhere, actually it's on YouTube as well, is we're in Poughkeepsie, New York one night. I worked Raven for about 15 minutes when I went to Dangerous Alliance, and my back was out on me. So what got me through the match was adrenaline. I couldn't walk all day. So I wrestled Raven. New Jack does a run in. He and I are wrestling. And Jack does the thing with the staple gun to where when he lays you down, or he does the thing with the staple gun, when he hits the staple gun, usually it's a gimmick to where he don't have any staples in it unless he's working somebody like Vic Grimes, who he hated. So he worked Vic Grimes the night before, and he took that out. He was sitting there with me as we're going over the match, and he takes the staples out as we're going through the match, and we go out there and we start working the match, and he lays me down. And he puts the thing on the head of my dick, and when he hits the staple gun, there's one staple that had gotten stuck in the gun and comes out. And go. It's about an inch and a half staple, and it goes in the head of my dick. And the sheer pain from it, I'm rolling around screaming. And I see what happens. And music's playing, Jack's dancing. People are going, you know, bananas because he had just hit the staple gun on me. He goes, get up, C-Dub, next spot. Get up, C-Dub. I look up at him. I said, Jack, you have stapled my dick. And he looks down and goes, oh, my God. And I said, Jack, I'm a paralyzed crab. I can't move. And he lays down beside me. He starts laughing. He says, stop, you're making me laugh. I said, Jack, I can't fucking move. He acts like he's selling, but he's sitting there laughing his ass off at the pain I'm in. So that was probably my most my famous story with Jack.
So New Jack his way through here on the indie circuit. Have you made your way through the Metro Detroit Midwest area?
It's been quite a few years since I've been up to Detroit. The last time I was in Detroit is when I was flying through to go to Japan. But as far as wrestling, it's probably been a good 10 years since I've been to Detroit to wrestle.
Where have you wrestled here?
Okay. Do what?
What promotions have you wrestled at here?
Man, I have no idea. I don't remember the names for them up there. It's been so long.
Okay. They are. Do you remember who your opponents were here?
The one I do remember, I don't remember who I wrestled that night. I just remembered the promoter brought me in to put a chair shot on this guy, and it's actually that one's on YouTube as well.
Awesome.
That's the one. That's all I remember.
So you worked for a lot of promotions where extreme stuff was going down. Did you are you a fan of the deathmatch genre at all?
No, not one bit. No, I've not been a fan of that. Never been a fan of it.
That's and there's definitely a difference between the hardcore and the deathmatch style.
Oh yeah, 100%. That's why I just do hardcore. I think I'm a bit too squeamish to do deathmatch.
Now, if y'all would, a lot of black men to kind of jump in and elaborate on this, because I'm just learning something now, because I'm not deathmatch ain't really my thing, and, I would have associated hardcore as deathmatch. So the black man just didn't learn something real good right now, that there is a difference between hardcore and deathmatch. So
there's a huge difference.
All one and the same.
No, that's some extreme shit right there with the deathmatch stuff. Nah, if you ever, you won't never hear C.W. Anderson in deathmatch. I might have done it when I was in my, I might have done it when I was in my 20s, but I'm 50 years old now, and I do not recover like I used to.
So you announced a retirement last year in June. So are you back actively competing?
Yes. Hey, I unretired in January once I figured out me retiring was a huge mistake. You know, actually, it was a huge mistake and a blessing and all in the same, because once I did retire, because like I said, most people can't understand this. Been doing this for 28 years, and most everybody I know calls me CW, even the guys I play softball with, some of the guys I work with, they all call me CW. So becoming that CW genre, that character, was almost – that's how I lived. So I kind of lost myself. So I had to get away, step back, and it's as corny as it sounds, find myself again and just reset my life and realize what's important in this life. And I realized that I let wrestling take over and letting it control me instead of me controlling it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So now once I came back, so first of the year, I am retired. You know, January 7th, I turned 50. January 8th, I asked the girl I was seeing, who is actually my valet, I asked her to marry me. So once I got my life together, I realized how much I enjoyed and how much I missed professional wrestling. So I've been back and almost wrestling every weekend since everything opened back up here in North Carolina.
That's cool. Hey, so since you live in North Carolina, you know, like I said, from a musical standpoint, I got to ask this. There is a wrestling convention out there. I believe it's called Wrestlecade. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the promotion I work for. Hey, the guys that run AML, that's who I work for every month. And I helped last year, book some of Wrestlecade as far as bringing when we did the ECW thing, which is a few years ago. So those guys that run WrestleCade are really good friends of mine.
Awesome. That's awesome. Do you know a little bit on the history of WrestleCade, like how it got started and all of that?
Yeah, it was two guys that loved professional wrestling, and they actually thought they could run their own little promotion, and they saw these conventions going on. They kind of wanted to do the same thing in North Carolina, and it just basically started from there, and now it's grown to something that's, you know, we're getting 10,000 fans on the weekend. It's a 2-3 day. It was a 3-day thing until the pandemic hit. We were running Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it was 5 or 6 shows of professional wrestling. And, you know, you're putting 300 or 400 people in that place every night. And then you had the big show, which is the Saturday afternoon show that has about 4,000 or 5,000 people there. And it's an all-day signing.
That's amazing.
We call it our Christmas. because we get to go spend mm-hmm. 3 days in Winston-Salem, see a lot of people we don't get to see on a regular basis, and get to do something that we just love, which is, you know, meet fans, wrestle, and just have a good time and not have to worry about real life, so to speak.
Now I have a question on that. Is it true that one of those gentlemen was like a minister or was involved with the church, and like it kind of started with doing like a drive for like young people or the homeless with socks and clothes, et cetera? Didn't it kind of start off that way too? I thought I read something like that.
That probably has something to do I know Tracy Myers, the guy that's pretty much the owner. He's real heavily into mm-hmm. the church and does things like that. Actually, I usually talk to him about a few times a week. I have to ask him that because I don't remember that part of it. But I do know that, you know, we have George South, who's a minister, Tracy, who's really heavily into the church. It possibly could be true. I wouldn't put that past because Tracy is really big into giving back to the community and, you know, helping out people.
George South, a huge legend there, man.
Yeah,
shout
he and I just
George
had a
South.
Feud a couple years ago that they call it they actually got it on YouTube now. It's four of our matches that they said basically sparked interest back in the Mid-Atlantic. The title of it is the second greatest story ever told. Every match we had, there was not one move out of the 80s. Everything was called in the ring. And just to give you a minute how much the fans were involved, Tracy, the guy that owns the promotion, he told us when we wrestled one match, our second match, he goes, "I've cried one time in professional wrestling. That's the night Shawn Michaels superkicked Flair to retire him." He said, "In this match, I cried twice with the emotion you had everybody feeling."
Wow.
And then we finished it off with a brutal, brutal I Quit match. I had lost so much blood that when I took my shower afterwards, I passed out on the gymnasium floor on the way back.
Wow.
They're Whoa. Really good matches, man. They're really every
where,
one of them.
Where on YouTube? Can you
it's
find
on,
that?
It's YouTube. You can type in AML Wrestling and CW Anderson,
AML.
And you'll scroll through it. The thumbnail is a picture of George South all bloody, and they call it the second greatest story ever told. And some people go, "What's the first?" The Bible. So, yeah, it's four matches. It has all the promos, all the build up, everything. Because during that time, and going on to the second match, I was going through a lot of personal issues, and I brought them into the storyline. So you see the emotion of my promos and where I've kind of lost it and to that extent. So I brought my real life into those promos, which actually made them work. And the second match has my buddy Steve Carino is out there with us. Hunter let him come in and work with us one night, that night.
That is amazing.
Are you content with where you are? Or are you looking to expand where you're trying to work?
I'm always looking to expand. I don't know if some of the companies offered, I'd go. I'm not a if somebody like Impact would offer, possibly. But I'm really content. I have a fantastic real job, and I like being at home during the week and spending time with my family and Brittany, my fiance, and my two Rottweilers. So I'd have to entertain some. I would never go back to WWE, even to teach or anything like that. I don't want to be gone that long. I have no interest.
What was that locker room atmosphere like in WWE?
A lot of people in it for themselves. A lot of they'll show you the knife before they stab you in the back. You're miserable. You're not happy. That it's not a good experience to be around. Every time people tell stories of being around there or being there, it's always people are miserable. People don't like being there. They hate being there. And I'm not just the only one that says it. Most of the people that work there say that just how much of a horrible place it is to be. Just for the atmosphere. Yes, you can make a lot of money, but I didn't enjoy the time I was there. Once the 1 year I was there, I was ready to get fired. I was so ready to leave that place because at the time I was still, you know, going back and forth to Japan before they signed me, and I was so ready to go back to Japan. I like being in locker rooms like that. I like being in locker rooms like the AML locker room that I'm at now. How it was when I was with NWA right before the pandemic hit. You know, Billy Corgan's NWA, guys that want to help you. We all look out for each other. We all try to make everybody better. We're all looking at everybody's matches. We're trying to make the show better. We're not out there to look to sabotage somebody just because they have a better match and they try to steal the show. If you go out there at NWA and you steal the show, fuck yeah, fantastic. That means I just got to step my game up. That's how it was at ECW. That's how it is at AML. It ain't like that up there. If you have a great match, you get punished for it, especially if you outshine the ones that are on top. So with that being said, your question?
So you mentioned going to Impact. Like between Impact and AEW, which I think would be a great place for a wrestler like you to work too, who would you most like to work with? Who do you think you would have the best match with? And would it be by yourself, or would it be with Simon Diamond?
If I could, I think Simon and I could, if we could get the FTR, because I know those two personally. I knew them from the Independence here in Carolina.
Wow.
My
favorite
FTR we have
ever.
You know, they were really good. Not saying they're not good now, because they are, but I am not a fan of the AEW style. I am more of an old school,
wow,
yeah, emotion over motion. I'm not a fan of the newer style that they put where nobody's a heel, nobody's a face. A lot of the storylines don't make sense. And I'm just not a fan of that style whatsoever. That's my personal opinion.
I think they're definitely
still
throwing some shit at the wall to see what will stick, too.
They got some fantastic.
I agree. Some of it I can't get behind. Some of it I can't. It's not entertaining to me, some of it.
I don't understand some of the stuff they're doing and why they're doing it. I'm sitting there. I watch it as much as I can. But you got guys like Jerry Lynn, you got Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard backstage that could help these guys and give them, because professional wrestling storylines still sell. Have a good storyline that makes sense. A lot of stuff they do is bass backwards. There's no build up to it. It's like you give them the finish before, and then you try to run the storyline afterwards. I don't understand it. But you know what? I'm not in charge of that company. That's on that. They'll figure it out one day, hopefully.
Brother Anderson, I think you made a good point and a very, very fair observation about AEW, because I'm a big wrestling fan, obviously, and I watch both WWE and AEW. And that was something that I noticed right away about AEW. I think they got a lot of promise. I think there's some good stuff, but then it's like, at the same time, I went, you know, it seems like they just doing stuff to do because I guess that with everybody they like, they're happy, so they're just doing what makes them happy. And
yeah, you can't do that.
As a wrestling fan, and when people have these debates about WWE, AEW, and this and that, and oh, AEW's going to take over, and I'm just going, whoa, slow down, Pilgrim. Because, see, WWE's been around a long time. I mean, I know the behind-the-scenes stuff,
yeah.
Your experience is one thing. But speaking of the overall product, I keep telling people, this is why, if you keep doing this whole AEW just going to take over, no, slow down. They just been here for a cup of coffee, baby. They just got here.
They're not going to take over. They're not. And you got five different personalities or executive five presidents. You have too many chiefs, not enough Indians. You have too many damn factions.
Mm-hmm.
You got
guys that want
to go on first to get their shit in, so the rest of the show can go to hell afterwards, because they got to get it. Everybody's got to get their shit in the first match instead of being able to tell a story. They don't know the story, the structure of a show.
Absolutely.
But you know, and it seems like with some of the guys they got up there, you know, you got Cody, his dad, and hell, you got Dustin there. I know Dustin really well. Dustin's got a very good mind for this business. But
yeah.
I got a feeling a lot of those guys do not want to don't want to listen. They'll listen, but they don't want to put it into into use.
Yes, and I know.
Do you think
that
it's trial and error, or do you think it's what they really think is good?
Yeah, that's what they really think is good because they've been doing it, and because a lot of them were indie darlings, and now they're on national TV on a weekly basis. And they're having to come up with new stuff every week.
And you can't tell them nothing, probably, as well,
nope.
Correct?
No, you can't.
So a lot of them
you can't tell.
Yeah, and to answer Brother Greg's question even more, if you remember when Kenny Omega made his departure from New Japan, you know, rumors were swirling, the buzz was going around. It was somewhat of a bidding war, it appeared. WWE want them, AEW want them, the new startup, and all these places, right? And so the question was posed to Brother Omega, and it was, you know, where are you trying to go? And he said, I have an opportunity to go where I can make other people happy, or I can go somewhere I can be happy. And then he said, I want to be happy. And so it turned out that he joined AEW, you know, with his buddies. And in my opinion, just kind of going back again, this is not to bash him, you know, for all the so-called AEW mocks and all these militant people, gang-like mentality, need to chill. One thing I know is that this is not enough, as a wrestler fan, there's not enough backstory. There's not enough explanation of who is this person and why is this person here. I mean, when they first started out, man, they came off like real, in the words of Jim Cornette, outlaw macho, you know what I'm saying? He kind of made a valid point because they were doing things that just didn't make sense to me as a wrestling fan. I mean, I've been watching for a long time. I've been in diapers watching wrestling, and the stuff they were doing just didn't make sense. And so they've changed since then. But even so, they're doing stuff that just makes them happy. And see, eventually, you got to cut that out, and you got to do what's going to make money because, see, Big Daddy Khan is the real owner of AEW. You feel what I'm saying? Not Lil Tony, not Junior. Big Daddy Khan, Papa Khan. Because once he sees that this ain't viable, he is the one that go say, son, sell it or I'm going to kill it. One way or the other, I can't keep losing money. So they're going to refine that game. They're going to have to refine that game. And then, go ahead, sir. I don't want to cut you off.
No, you're 100% correct. And, you know, that's why I love listening to Jim Cornette talk, because his stuff, he's spot on all the time with his stuff. And it seems like it, because sometimes they do listen to him because you see little changes they make because of Cornette's criticism on them. And that's why I like listening to Cornette, because, again,
I don't like him. He's such an asshole, but I love listening to him. And he knows so much about wrestling. And
he's a freaking genius.
Like who he is and the person he is, because he's such a fucking dick, you know. But
I listen to him
because, you know, and I guess you say I respect him. And he does, and they know. They hear him. And he's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't always agree with him either, you know, with his opinions about things. Some of the things he thinks are not good, you know. I think some of that stuff is good, but it's definitely entertaining to listen to.
Oh, 100% entertaining. Let's do it. And you know, I love being able to listen to him, like the big death match fail they had, and hearing him berate about that and how right he was on that. Just things like that. It tickles me. It gives me good humor to listen to that stuff, because again, a lot of it's my beliefs as well. And it's just where I was raised, how I was raised, and what I was taught.
Especially when, you know, I told you so. I mean, I said the guy's such a dick. It's, man, when he told you so, it's entertaining shit to listen to.
Yeah, 100%.
See, and if I may elaborate, coming from the context of being a musician, I noticed that something similar with playing music in a band and with the wrestling business. And this is something I was taught growing up, that when you play music, You don't do all your fancy stuff in the beginning, in the middle of a song. You know what I'm saying? You wait to the end, like a big end, or if you got a solo, that's when you show out. Because when it's time for a big finish or a big solo, you ain't got nowhere to go when you've done all the special solo stuff. You know what I'm saying? And so I kind of see that the same way with pro wrestling. I think we see too many big moves and as y'all say, big, all these spots, and they all look like finishing moves. And so the problem
guys,
is that my concern
kicking
about
out
wrestling
at,
yes,
no, I was just saying,
yes.
Guys kicking out at one with a Canadian destroyer off the top rope through a table, shit like they don't even
yes,
sell
yeah.
shit. And you go out there and do that stuff, and you don't even make it look believable. And I go out there and try to punch somebody or spine bust somebody for a finish. They're not going to believe that because somebody else has kicked out of a level 10th degree move, and this guy just takes my spine buster for me. It doesn't make sense. And their storylines don't make sense to some for a lot of extent because let's take a famous movie everybody knows, The Sixth Sense. If the beginning of the movie mm-hmm. you found out Bruce Willis was dead, what interest do you have in the rest of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
It's the buildup. Every little part of that story led up to him finding out he was dead. And when you found out he was dead, you go back and look at everything like, holy shit, it was right in front of my face and I didn't see it.
The whole
storyline
is
the same.
That's the beauty about wrestling. You know what I'm saying?
You want to learn something in professional wrestling and be a good wrestler. From a tip, always remember professional wrestling, and it still holds true, professional wrestling is emotion over motion.
Mm-hmm.
If you get people involved,
I agree.
Get their feelings. You get their feelings involved in what you're doing. Look at the Rock and Hogan when they had their classic. The emotion they had
mm-hmm.
there before they even locked up.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to do anything.
The crowd went nuts, baby. I sat and watched that WrestleMania on TV, and I could feel it, baby. I could feel it in my bones that this was going to be something special. And see, we don't have enough of that no more. They showed us this is how it's done, you know, and we're missing that as an 80s baby, Brother Anderson. I really miss the mystique of pro wrestling. There's not enough mystique anymore because everybody wants the wilds and the cheap pops and they want to see all this high octane. Yeah, yeah. And see, after a while, it don't make sense. You know, as you all say, you wrestle, you got to tell a story. They don't want to tell a story. They just want to tell all the punchlines. You know what I'm saying? Nothing
yep.
leading up to it. And one more thing, do me a favor. Oh, go ahead.
Do me a favor. When you guys get done with this interview, over the next week, take time. It's a couple hours long. But bits and pieces.
I'm gonna watch.
Watch the stuff with me and George, and see how
I
many big moves
I'm going
we
to.
Did.
I love emotional storytelling wrestling. That's what I love. I love to get lost in it. Which I've been real lucky that some really cool people, you know, like me, and I've been you know able to be involved in wrestling, doing commentary. I've done ring announcing, you know, and you know I love to. Get lost in it. I don't like to know what's going to happen. I like to get lost in it, and you know, the emotion.
Up until the I Quit
match.
The I Quit match had enough emotion to build in it because Shane Douglas was a special guest referee in that. But every move,
mm-hmm.
in those three matches, not one move was done out of the '80s.
Hmm.
You see my old ass do a monkey flip in there. I don't think I've ever done a monkey flip.
So,
you have to watch it, and you have to let me know what you think of it.
I promise
sir.
I will.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Now sir, one more. AEW related, I'm going to let it go, okay? But
no worries.
This is just the black man's thoughts. So I always want to hear pro wrestler's perspective. But here's my opinion. Out of all the people that they have in that company right now, Chris Jericho, I totally understood and get why he was their first AEW champion. I totally got that. I had no problem with it. But at this point, why is it Cody Rhodes their champion? Their top, I just think they're missing a whole lot of money on the table. I think he's their best performer all around. I think he gives pretty good promos. I want to see a huge feud between he and MJF. I think, I mean, another guy. I mean, any longer, if he's in that company for too long, he's going to miss his chance on a real big payday. I mean, that top guy.
There's one thing in this business that people know Cody is one of the owner, if not the main owner in the Booker. And one thing you do not do is put the belt on yourself, because looks like you're just putting yourself over and screwing the fans and any promotion. If you run that promotion, you're in charge of it, you're the Booker, you do not put the belt on you. And even though Kenny Omega is technically one of the executive vice presidents, everybody knows that Cody is the flagship with that. It's his to an extent, because so that's one of the – he probably will down the road, but he won't keep it long. Because, one, he's a big fan favorite, and you always try to keep the belt on a heel. If you go back in wrestling, the belts are always supposed to be on heels. But that's the main reason, because he is probably the head booker, and everybody knows that.
Awesome. Okay. No, you know what? Now, that makes a lot of sense. But do you say maybe, just maybe, he kind of put himself in the corner there with you know, having all that responsibility to the point to where he can't become the big draw or bring the big payday, bring more viewers in? I mean, do you think maybe this could be working against him a bit?
He still is a draw. He's still Cody Rhodes. Everybody knows he's the son of Dusty Rhodes. He had his run at WWE. I don't know if Cody wants, personally, knowing Cody, I've known Cody since he was 12 or 14 years old. I don't think Cody wants to be that top guy there. He don't want that. He's got enough responsibility on him being the booker. I think he's letting the other guys, some of the younger ones, carry that, and they'll let Omega carry that flagship of being the draw there with some of the other guys. But I think Cody's content on his mid-card level status. You know, we've got his wife helping him out, and they just had the baby. I think he's pretty content with that. That's just Cody. Cody's going to go out there. He's going to give you a good match. But as far as having the belt and him being in the spotlight, being the number one guy, I just don't think that's what Cody wants. I just think he's happy right where he's at.
Understood. Totally understood. And thank you for that clarity. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cody's definitely one of those guys that can have a great match with pretty much anyone. And I would like to see him at the top of the card. For sure.
Yeah, I never got to wrestle. I've never gotten to wrestle Cody. I've been on a few shows with him, and like I said, when I worked for his dad, he was little. But if I had the chemistry, with Cody that I do with his brother Dustin, me and him could have some unbelievable matches. Because Dustin and I, besides Masato Tanaka and Too Cold Scorpio, me and Dustin Rhodes and I have some of the most amazing chemistry together. It's just something. I had it with his dad when I worked Dusty several times. It's just something about that. So I'm sure Cody's going to fall right into that if I ever got a chance to work him.
That's why I was going to ask you about guys that, you know, you had great chemistry with.
Yeah. The Dreamer, Carino, Dustin. But I think Masato Tanaka is probably the one I had the most chemistry with. And the very first night I wrestled Too Cold Scorpio, we got in the back and we were at ECW Arena. It was a benefit show for Francine Fournier's sister. And when I got in the back with Scorp, he pulled me to the side. He said, I've only ever had chemistry with two other people in this business like I have with you. He said, one being Chris Benoit and the other one being Eddie Guerrero. I went, shit,
wow.
that's a hell of a damn company to be a part of.
That's an elite company indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a huge company. You know, when we wrestled at Hardcore Justice for TNA that one time, he requested that he had the match with me. So that's why we wrestled each other.
I love a wrestler style. I always have. I like Steve Regal.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. You know what? Thatcher, the young Timothy Thatcher guy at NXT, he kind of puts me in the mind of a little bit of Regal, you know, just edgier, meaner, you know, saying
right.
grittier. But, you know, yeah, I respect people like that because I remember in the WCW days, Regal, I just thought, for one, I thought the man was old. I thought he was like 40 years old. He was only in his 20s back then. But he was one of my all-time favorite TV champions. He carried that title well.
He's another one that could go out there and wrestle a broomstick or Ric Flair and have a five-star match.
With his eyes closed, you know what I'm saying? He's that good.
That's the guy, when I got in the wrestling business, I was and still am a mark for Bobby Eaton. Like, he's my idol, and that's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Bobby Eaton because Bobby was that guy. Bobby could wrestle Flair, he could wrestle a broomstick, and he was going to have a five-star match with him. And that's the guy I wanted to be.
Oh, my brother Bobby E. We don't talk about beautiful Bobby enough. It is a crime, you know what I'm saying?
He might be one of the most underappreciated guys ever.
Oh,
yep.
Ever. I mean, I look back at certain things. I mean, he didn't have the look, you know what I'm saying? He had no bodybuilder's physique. You know, he had the long blonde hair, but it wasn't like no... like Ultimate Warrior or anybody who had like a big, great looking hair back then. He ain't had none of that, but the brother could work his tail. I mean, the Midnight Express is always
they're my all-time
favorite tag team.
I'll tell you a story.
Theme song too. They had the best entrance music,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Just amazing. Everybody knew what kind of mark I was for Bobby. Even Paul Heyman knew. So when he brought Bobby in one night, because he was going to run a program with me, and we were at the ECW arena, so I knew all day I was going to do something with Bobby Eaton that night. And I am, like I said, I still am a mark for Bobby, even though I'm on a really personal level with him now. So we're at the arena. It's way before the show. I'm in the ring. I go walking through the back, and at the old arena, you had two black curtains that you had to walk through. You walked through one black curtain that led you out to the ring. But in between that was a room off to the side where like Taz, the Dudley, Shane Douglas, the higher ups changed because it was air conditioned. Mm-hmm. And then you had like a big hallway room that where the rest of us dressed. So I walked through the first curtain, and as I'm getting ready to walk through the second curtain, I see Paul Heyman sitting there with Bobby Eaton at the table talking. And to see Bobby Eaton live for the first time, I had to go in another room, in that room, and collect myself and calm myself down before I walked out there and meet him, because I was like a young schoolgirl meeting Justin Bieber. That's how marky I was being. And, you know,
man,
people laugh because they're like, man, you're C.W. Anderson. You would, you know, you were doing this shit either. I'm like, man, I'm still a mark. And I went out there, I shook Bobby's hand. I was nervous as hell to shake his hand.
I feel you.
That's awesome.
I feel you. Man, don't let the black man meet some of his childhood friends like Hulk Hogan or Coco Beware, my kayfabe daddy. I never met him, but I love to shake hands with him close in person. You know what I'm saying? So I can imagine you mocking out to Brother Bobby. I mean, I mock out to Brother Bobby because that man was just a great, great wrestling worker. And like I said, people like that deserve their flowers while they're here and alive and well. You know, I would love to see him come up to Michigan and just give like a little clinic for people to show them how it's done.
Don't let wrestlers tell you that they're not marks or they don't mark out for people, because the first time I wrestled Dusty Rhodes, it was in a bull rope match for his promotion. And as they're strapping us up, Dusty's doing his dance and his talking and stuff like that. And then they're wrapping me up on the outside. I'm C.W. Anderson, big badass guy that's going to whoop Dusty Rhodes' ass. But on the inside, I'm 12-year-old Chris Wright marking the hell out going, holy shit, I'm getting ready to wrestle Dusty Rhodes.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. I did one night a few years ago when I was wrestling for Brittany, my fiance's dad's promotion in Virginia. It was me and Shane Douglas with J.J. Dillon as our manager against the Rock and Roll Express. And the finish was Shane Douglas had Ricky Morton, and J.J. Dillon takes his shoe off and throws it in the ring to me. And there again, as his shoe's coming in the ring, I'm 12-year-old Chris Wright marking out again like, holy shit, J.J. Dillon is tossing me his shoe.
Man,
Wow.
This little shit like that, man, it just keeps me enthralled with this business because it throws me back to when I was that little kid.
Did you have any positive memories or fun times in your time with WWE, or were you just so miserable that you weren't able to enjoy any of it?
Let's see, the first night at the arena before Vince took it over, I got to wrestle Sabu at the arena, and that was a big accomplishment for me. But I think my positives of that was hanging out with Francine, because me and Francine are so, so tight to where when we find out that we weren't on the show, she and I would, like, edge along the wall with our bag and sneak out and run through the cars to get to our car to go to the next town. And I remember we were doing it one night and Sergeant Slaughter called us. But we were like, me and Franny were like little 10-year-old kids running through the parking lot trying to get to our car to leave.
I was totally smitten with Francine, totally in love with her. I've been with my wife since we were 13 and 16. And I told her, I said, I might marry her one day, just so you know.
I still smell her. I love Francine to death, and she's just as beautiful now as she was when we were at ECW.
She absolutely is.
Yeah, she is a great woman.
Like
she has a fantastic husband. It's kind of like who?
Yeah, it's kind of like how I feel about my boo Nia Jax. I can't say that too loudly around my wife because a sensational one gets real jealous. Oh, you got to meet the band one day, Brother Anderson. And my wife, she's a member. We call her the fire singer and the fire bringer. And sometimes when I'm watching Monday Night Raw, I make a mistake and I slip out and say, oh, there goes my boo, Nia Jax. Yay. And then she goes, who are you talking about? Oh, no. You sleep on the couch today. And I go, no, that's not what I meant. So, and Brother Greg can attest to it because he's seen it in person. And he saved me. He saved my bacon. You know, he said, hey, next question, moving on. You know, so I know how you feel about when you got that TV boo, you know, your TV boo, your little TV crush. You know what I'm saying? I totally understand.
Yeah, there was no one holding a candle to Francine to me, to 15-year-old me.
What makes Francine great is she's
just walking into manhood, brother.
She's such a good woman and has such a good heart. Because it's just, you know, talking to her and seeing her, but she is just if she's one of those, when you talk to her, that's what you get. You just get such a very down to earth person.
If she ever wants to come on the show, we would be glad to have her.
And, oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll
make sure she listens
out
to this podcast. Then.
Oh, I'd mark out talking to Francine for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Unbelievable. Man, you have been so much fun to talk to, man. I'm sure
you
could. I
appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Tell us stories, you know, all night. We're going to let you get back to your life, man. We thank you so much for your time this evening, man. This was
awesome. You're certainly welcome, man. Anytime you guys want to do another part, just hit me up. I'd be glad to.
Oh, I'd be awesome to do a part two. That, you know, hear some more stories from you, man. 28 years, it's a lot of stories to sneak into 1 hour. But thank you so much for your time, man. And God
You're
bless
you. You're certainly
you.
Welcome, gentlemen. Yeah, y'all have a great evening.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Man. That was C.W. Anderson, one of the funnest conversations we've ever had.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome.
I mean, genuine, sincere, down to earth, baby. So down to earth, he might got roots growing out his fingernails. You know what I'm saying?
Hey,
I respect people
like
that.
And he might can hook us up with Francine.
Hey, you know
he said he'll make sure she listens to it. Right. Oh, wow. That would be unbelievable.
Just thank good brother Greg, your childhood memory could be facing you full circle, Daddy, and you get to say, well, not anything, but yeah.
Hey.
You still there?
Hang on a second.
Hello?
Wait a minute. We have on the line the Southwest Texan, Day-Day Cruz.
Oh,
yo,
man.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Great fucking show, guys. I was listening to the whole thing, and Coco, just
yeah,
be aware
to most of the
that
show
I will be there on Saturday at your big birthday bash.
Yeah.
I will not miss this for some, not even for SummerSlam, damn it.
Oh, man, now see, y'all gonna make the black man blush and shed a couple tears hearing something like that. Coming to the birthday party, man, see, life is precious, y'all. And so I learned, I don't say life is short, I say life is precious. So I say you enjoy every good chance you get, and when you got people you love and respect, have them join in with you, baby. So to hear you say, I'm coming, good brother Coco, in the next 4 to 8 hours. Man, that does my heart so good. I'm down here washing clothes. I'm getting, moving stuff out of the basement, getting equipment together, expecting a rehearsal tomorrow. I mean,
you do not have 48 hours. You'll be in the heart of the party in 48 hours. Yeah, you don't even have 48 hours, bro. You got
45,
40 top.
I heard that the Rated R Wrestling podcast might get Francine to the show one day.
Yes, sir.
That's something I heard.
Uh-oh.
Now, is that the
Uh-oh.
Truth?
Uh-oh.
Like
you know
now, listen,
what?
Brother.
Man.
Now, Brother Day-Day.
The Rated R.
Brother Day-Day, you.
Yes, sir.
You got magic in your hands, you know, magic in your voice or something. Now, I need to see if you can pull this off. Now, I'm not going to say this too loud because I can't have a sensational one breathing and fussing down my neck, you know what I'm saying? And I don't want her to take her anger out on y'all and demote you. But is it possible, just by some blind chance, that you can reach out to my TV boo, Nia Jax, so I can just express my heart sentiments to her and let her know?
Oh,
that
man.
I cannot have anything to do with that.
Exactly. I have no dogs in that race.
Hell
I mean,
no.
My thing
no
is,
dogs.
No.
I was just going to say that, Day-Day.
Coco.
Day-Day borrowed my line.
Now,
no dogs.
Now,
absolutely
now,
not.
Now, what I'm going to say. Now, Coco.
Because we love
you.
Texas,
don't
and
you?
Because we
I'm
love
your brother,
you.
Right?
20% of the reason is because we love you. 20%. The other
okay.
80 is our own safety.
That's what I was going to say. I was actually going to say, man. You know,
5%
Coco,
I thought you were better than 75%.
I thought you liked me, man. I you know, I don't want to do that, and then the sensational one comes and kills me. You won't have the text mother Rated R Wrestling podcast no more.
Oh, come on. Okay, fine. You talk me out
you
of
will
this.
Orphan my
I mean,
nephew Josiah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
on,
you almost...
You will orphan my nephew
Josiah. I got to be there for my son, man. You're trying to get me killed.
And then after
Sensation One come after me, Josiah Mama gonna come after you. Then we gonna be double out on Open Talk Radio.
Oh man!
Oh, yeah.
She'll definitely hold you responsible.
Because you tried to plant the seeds for that big hypothetical mess. See, you just tried to.
Okay.
That's what's gonna happen.
Man.
Nothing good will come of it.
How about this? We do a secret meeting at the WWE live event that's coming up, and maybe I can work the magic there. But it got
to
be the first.
Hey, no dogs. Let the record reflect. I will have nothing to do with that. Nothing.
We got to have a secret meeting
to do with that.
Hey,
okay,
so Greg,
did you see?
I gotta. Before we go, oh, we're over time, but I want to just say this, Greg. Now I have been given the blessing for overtime. Oh no,
we're good.
So my thing is,
I didn't botch it. We actually would have been out at 8 o'clock on the dollar, actually. But yeah, we have the blessing of overtime this evening. The gorilla position will return, but not tonight.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Ah, tonight you get overtime with the Southwest Texan Day-Day Cruz.
Woo!
Just a little bit. So one thing I got to ask you is, did you see the promo video of Dread King Logan talking to TBA in his 25th anniversary?
Uh-oh.
No.
The Dread King Logan? I'm looking for
the Dread Queen Logan wants to challenge DBA, so
I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, I kind of was looking forward to that, the dynasty of the Monroes versus the LA of X.
Huh.
Yeah.
See, you know what I'm going to have to do?
Dude, I totally forgot about the anniversary.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's coming up.
I will be with the Godfather on July 18th, actually. My ring will be featured at Proving Ground. That's Proving Ground Season 8, episode, the official Episode 1.
Oh,
it's
going to
be great. That venue needs a low boy ring, and I got the ring, and yep, I talked to DBA last night.
You know what I can say, guys? I can kind of say this, and I'm trying to not toot my own horn or the own horn of this podcast, brother Greg. You don't have to. My opinion does not reflect on Greg DeMarc unless he wants him to, or brother Coco unless he wants him to. But I got to say this: the Rated R Wrestling Podcast 313 is one of the best wrestling podcast in Michigan. I don't see not like that, but we have had some big names in the past in this half of a year that we had.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
since
indeed.
The new season started, it's been, star-studded season, man. Teddy Hart, Teddy Long, C.W. Anderson, the
Headbangers are going to be on at the end of the month.
The OMGs.
OMGs, tag team champions. Yeah.
And that's just, lots more to come, you know. And
there's lots more to come.
What we've got
going
on around here, it's God is with us, gentlemen, and that's for sure. And
yeah.
Martez was here. He would, definitely say, man, God is with us, man, and he takes care of us, and he brought us together for a reason. And, I'm blessed. I am. I'm kind of living a dream, man, with wrestling and doing the commentary and ring announcing and,
The sky's the limit for us over here. We got invited to Texas by Teddy Long yourself to go to the SWE and hang out with everybody that's in that locker room, which means managers, wrestlers, makeup artists, referees, anything that we want.
Oh, don't jive us, brother. Don't jive us. You mean to tell me?
Teddy, definitely.
Teddy Long made
that
official. Teddy made that is official.
Yeah,
there's
and
no
we can't. We definitely got to make it there sooner or later.
Us here,
to take
us here, we don't we,
to,
we don't sing it. We don't sing it. We bring it. We don't sing it. We bring it over here at Open Talk in the Rated R. We bring it. We don't.
I hear that, brother. I hear that. So in other words, you can bring my jack.
Like I said, that's got to be a secret meeting.
Anybody else?
Come on,
you know
man.
What? Hey, Coco, I'm going to stop you right there, but I'm trying to get your special request that you did ask for.
I am working on.
I got one of Coco's special requests. We got Hannah Henderson. Coming soon.
Hey, Greg, I thought you were going to say AVZ.
That's his new favorite wrestler. He won't admit it. He knows.
Come on, man. See, I've got enough heat with this brother Greg. Now, don't.
You
got
no heat with me. You got no heat with me at all.
No, you ain't got no heat with me, man. You ain't got no heat.
You backing that doggone JZC, Mickey D,
STD, DVD,
the Starbucks sipping,
the Sultan of Starbucks. That is
the sister of Starbucks.
That's terrible. We can't be endorsed. How about good brother Electric E. Lee or some Mr. One Night Only or the good brother Fruit Gun, D-Ray 3000, people like that. There's some good people to work with. But that don't.
Now we're talking. But again, my man, JP Ono, will do whatever it takes to win a match, to win a championship, to keep a championship, because J.P. Ono is smart. Eric Ealy is not. If he was as smart as he was gifted, as smart as he was strong, he wouldn't be fighting. He wouldn't be voluntarily challenging three guys, you know, in one night. You know, he wouldn't voluntarily defend the title the same night he won it against 19 other men, which he did against Caleb Spills. He wouldn't be, you know, taking impromptu matches against Forever Young, defending the title to open a show, you know.
Forever Young.
And Mr. I Won't Break the Rules slammed AVZ in the fucking bucket of tacks. So
he deserves
that's
it.
Your
yeah.
fucking
AVZ
hero.
ATV, put it out there. That's what he did. He tried to use it against Brother Ely, and it backfired.
16 fucking feet. There are 16 feet in that ring. And where did he drop him? In the 3x3 square that the tacks were in. Yeah, that's your hero.
That's where he belongs.
That's your hero. That's your boy that will stand on the second rope and throw 10 nugget pieces in a motherfucker's face, and which equate to about a 15 count by the refs. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's it. That's all you get. You get 4 legally. But, hey, but it's wrong when AVZ mule kicks a man in his balls.
Hey, well, look, to change the subject, because we can debate this until midnight. Speaking of the party again, you mentioned good brother J.P. Ono. You just might see Mr. One Night Only at the One Night Only Bash. It will only be right, baby. So you might catch him. You might catch Dirty Money Incorporated, that dastardly tightwad FIA and the Burger King, Brian Weather. You might catch them at the show. You just might see him. I can't make no promises, but you just might see him.
So check out on New Breed Productions. They have my commentary debut is up, the first three matches, as well as the fifth match, Orlando Christopher and Freedom Ramsey, and then matches 4, 6, 7, and 8. So you will see your boy J.P. Ono, and just watch film. Tell me what you think. Let me just tell you. J.P. Ono, a guy who not only will do anything to win, but will do anything to make sure the upper echelon wins, his faction, that he proudly leads into battle. And
well,
they
know,
do whatever
said,
it takes to win,
man.
Just so you know. So what is the difference between J.P. Ono and AVZ? AVZ came from more money than him. Is that what offends you? Or is it that AVZ is better looking than him? Is it that AVZ has better hair than him? Why don't you like AVZ, but you like Mr. One Night Only? What is it?
It's because,
what is your prejudice against Assault with Starbucks?
The problem with VC Ara is that he's a bad, terrible person. He's a liar. He's talking about. He's here to save people, and he don't even know what gender he is.
And you don't even appreciate it. He's telling you. He's trying to save you, and you don't even appreciate it.
I mean, he called.
Would you back Ono? I just want to know what's the difference.
He's got a Jesus complex. I mean, goodness gracious. He ain't Jesus. He's just out here trying to fight some call, and he ain't doing nothing.
Hey, let me put it like this.
That's all he's doing.
What if, hypothetically, J.P. Ono kicked Eric Ealy right in his big orange dick and pinned him and became the New Breed champion 2 Sundays ago?
It would be illegal.
Would you have a problem with that?
Wrong.
Or would you be happy that your friend, Mr. One Night Only, was the champion?
I'd be fine with Mr. One Night Only because I'm good with him. He's cool people.
Okay.
I'm good with
but
him.
AVZ kicks Rick Cartier in the nuts, and you crucify him for it. I still see it. It's a double
because
standard.
Because he was wrong, Daddy. He grabbed the referee. He should have been disqualified for even grabbing the referee like the way he did, and then kicked good brother, you know, with the back leg kick. He knew what he was doing. That was dastardly.
He was trying to bring the officials' attention to the cheating that Cartier was doing.
Yeah,
Cartier ain't above a handful of tights or a kick in the nuts. Don't let him tell you he's not. He's full of shit. Ain't that right, Dana? Is Cartier above a kick in the nuts or a handful of tights? There.
He can neither confirm nor deny.
See?
He can neither confirm nor deny. He is neutral. He is impartial.
So come on, be honest with yourself. Why do you hate Mr. Van Zandt? Why do you hate him so much?
Because he's a bad guy. He walks around drinking $8-$9 coffee, talking about check your privilege, when he is the epitome of privilege. The boy lives in his dad's basement in West Bloomfield. You can't be more privileged than that. He ain't even trying to get a place of his own and learn how to struggle like us real adults do on the daily. No, he wants to be pampered. He wants to be accommodated, if you will.
No, his parents are in Orchard Lake. He's in West Bloomfield.
Same
difference. He's in West Bloomfield. His parents are in Orchard Lake. He went to college. The man graduated from the University of Michigan. He's a successful guy.
By the way,
why do you hate him?
Now, he's not successful because he is the one that's just walking around with hypocrisy on his breath, you know what I'm saying, reeking with hypocrisy. He wants to tell everybody how they're wrong, but he's doing all of the wrong. See, guys like J.P. Ono, Mr. One Night Only, I respect him because he's consistent, because he's cool. He stays cool. He's always been cool.
So,
AVZ's
not consistent and straightforward about the fact that he will do whatever it takes to win, as is Mr. One Night Only.
He's consistently – no. Don't even put Mr. One Night Only in the same page of that doggone JPP. I don't even
yeah, you're right,
there.
Because the upper echelon is a superior faction or is an inferior faction to the popular kids, AVZ, Damian Chambers, and Jazakiel.
Oh, you mean the
So, yeah, you're right. Don't even put them.
Upper
you're right. That's apples
upper
and oranges.
Upper echelon is superior.
Is inferior.
Echelon. Superior.
The popular kids
the
are superior.
Superior.
The upper echelon is inferior.
That's what it is.
Inferior to them. No, I mean, hey, don't get me wrong, man. I love the upper echelon. I love Forever Young, which another guy that you ask Ono how he feels about Forever Young is one of his proteges in the upper echelon, along with Danny Astro.
And my friend is my enemy. Enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's how it works sometimes. See, the black man is
they
consistent. Van Zandt is consistently inconsistent. That's his problem.
That's your problem. It's not his problem. He's successful. He's going to be a champion. Watch. Future Cruiser Corps champion. I hope he's the one that finally dethrones that piece of shit alien, Movado.
Oh, that's just terrible. Movado is a fan. He's like the modern-day Junkyard Dog and Tito Santana rolling to one, baby.
He's a fucking alien.
Movado.
He's a weirdo fucking alien.
He
is not.
Alien.
You want to talk about a cheater? This guy isn't even human.
He is human.
This guy
has humanity in his system.
This guy has technologies that are, I've never seen Movado patted down properly and fully. I've never seen him sufficiently patted down. That's since he's been the Cruiser Corps champion. And he keeps somehow finding a way to win these matches that he absolutely should be losing. And he's been the champion damn near a year now. And it's about time that AVC slaps that stupid mask right off his stupid green alien face.
Whoa. That's just mean, brother. See, good brother Greg, see, that's not right, baby. That's why the next time I go to a wrestling
I don't like
show
the alien.
And brother Movado's on the card, I'm going to dig deep into my pocket, and I'm going to buy me a mask. And then I'm going to sit next to you, and then I'm going to put it on, Daddy, and just stare at you for 30 awkward minutes. And the longer I stare, the more you
I have a Movado mask.
Mysterious. See? But now you ain't wearing it, though. You ain't wearing it. You don't love you no Movado like that. Wait till I
of
get
course
my
not.
Mask.
I shoot,
I'm going to put it on.
I shoot my air pistol at it.
That's just terrible. So terrible, Brother Greg. Wasting.
I only shoot the air pistol. I mean, I paid good money for it. It's like $40. I'm not going to put a hole in it, so I just shoot the air pistol at it.
He got that from the planet Mercury,
it's
baby.
It's satisfying.
It's for us.
Yeah,
it's
bouncing
a
little plastic BBs off that stupid-looking mask is so satisfying.
That is just terrible. See, that's a shame. You know what? Maybe we ought to wrap this up or something, man, because you just bringing the black man down. I got to watch these clothes with some enthusiasm and anticipation. You're going to pick out the outfits that the black man is going to be rocking over the weekend. And the sensational one. She's going to steal the show. I'm telling y'all that right now. It's going to be about the black man to a degree because it's my birthday. But the wifey brother, oh, man, the fire singer, the fire bringer, she coming with it, y'all. Y'all ain't ready for it. I'm going to tell you that right now. But y'all better be on your toes, good Brother Greg. You better be paying attention. Because when she claps her hands,
oh,
I
certainly will.
Y'all got to tend to her right away. She don't like to be waiting.
Absolutely.
She made that clear. I will not wait. That's her thing. So I ain't got nothing to do with that.
We'll certainly be ready. I may attend Pro Wrestling All Stars Friday. I know you'll be putting the final touches on the big party.
Saturday,
July 10th. It's by invitation only.
Yes, sir.
It's at Coco
Streaming
Keith Castle.
Live on the Kayfabe backyard, baby. The Kayfabe compound, you know what I'm saying? In the Kayfabe backyard, it's going to be wonderful. I think up in the wrestling heaven, who is that? Oh, my man Mean Gene Oakland is probably going to be watching, looking down. I think the good brother, Hawkhead Animals, probably my favorite tag team of all time, they're going to be looking down, watching with great pleasure and excitement. We're probably going to see maybe Brother Owen Hart just may look down and smile and shine and go, you know, that was awesome. I wish I could be down there with it, but I'm enjoying this great golden wrestling ring in the sky. So it's all going to be wonderful. It's all going to be fun. One thing that's missing with this great party is the Sheik baby himself, Iron Sheik. Just let him get the mic for a couple minutes, and he'll probably cuss everybody out. You know what I'm saying? But he might want to break somebody's back and make them humble.
I thought this wasn't a rated R show. I thought this was more PG.
Well, I mean, if the Cheeky Baby show up, everything changes. You know, nobody has a choice. Well, Cheeky Baby shows
yeah, fair
does,
enough.
He just does it. We can't touch
maybe,
that, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe our MC, Jeremiah Goldmain, can put out a disclaimer if Cheeky Baby shows up.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And speaking of which, Brother Jeremiah Goldmain, this brother, I got to say, the moment I laid eyes on that brother, I said, oh, man, this dude is money right here. I see why he calls himself Jeremiah Goldmain. Because this brother's golden. He's rich. You feel what I'm saying? He got something great going one day. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Jimmy Hart, eat your heart out, baby. Eat your heart out.
Absolutely. Better dressed than Jimmy Hart, that's for damn sure. Well, all right, Coco, I'm going to let you get back to it. Thank you for all your help. And Day-Day's been out, man. It's been a lot of fun. We're going to continue to have fun together. We're going to have a hell of a lot of fun here Saturday night, man. I'm looking big time forward to it.
Oh, man. Man, we finna eat good. We finna play some great music and all whatnot. It's going to be phenomenal, Daddy. I can't wait.
Awesome. Well, I will see you in less than 48 hours, my brother.
Oh, yeah. That's right. On the popping, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, for our brother Day-Day and our brother Martez and me, Greg DeMarc, Coco, God bless you from all of us, man. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Peace out.